I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. One of our recent Curious CT stories looked at about 27 years of Connecticut tax data. It resulted from a question submitted by reader Bill Hakkinen, in which he asked, how much money has Connecticut received yearly since 1991 from income, sales, fuel, cigarette, and other taxes? How much did it spend on salaries, pensions, funds given to towns, infrastructure, etc.? Reporter Erica Moser talked to economists and state officials, as well as with the question asker, to better understand and contextualize the data. She stopped by the Storyline to talk about her reporting. Hey, Erica. Thanks for joining me today. Let's talk about your most recent Curious CT story about tax revenue and spending in Connecticut. Can you explain how the story came about and how you went about reporting?
Sure, and thanks for having me here today, Carlos. So when we put together these Curious CT voting rounds, we like to put them into kind of thematically similar rounds. The issue is you don't want to have a story about puppies going up against a story about crime. It's, you know, not comparing apples to apples. So we created a voting round themed around some of the tax-related questions that our readers had asked us. And part of that was out of this idea that there were a lot of tax-related questions, and it's something that's just so on the front of people's minds, and people often have these very big questions that are just essentially, where are my tax dollars going? So the question that narrowly won this voting round was, how much money has Connecticut received yearly since 1991 from income, sales, fuel, cigarette, and other taxes? How much did it spend on salaries, pensions, funds given to towns, infrastructure, etc.? So that is a big question, and that was asked by Bill Hakkinen, a retired man who lives in Ledyard, and he's lived in Connecticut with his wife since 1970. And when we were talking to him, we were explaining kind of some of the difficulties in investigating and answering such a big question. So starting with the first part of that question in terms of the tax revenue, that proved to be a much easier part of the question to answer. So we were trying to find the revenue, and the first place we ended up finding all of that data going back to 1991 was the U.S. Census Bureau. But they break out all of their data into quarters, so I was going through a spreadsheet and putting out all of the data into quarters. And meanwhile, I had a Freedom of Information Act request in with the Department of Revenue to get some of their data because they have their annual reports on their website, which go back to about 2006. Mm-hmm. So I had requested a section of the reports prior to that. Fortunately, in the reports, it's all very easily stated. There's just a single page that says state revenue sources. It lists the 40 or so types of taxes in Connecticut and how much revenue they got each year. We did end up using that data that we had gotten from the Department of Revenue Services, not the Census Bureau. The issue with the Department of Revenue Services data is that that was before accounting for tax refunds. So kind of the net total is what you would be able to find from the state comptroller's office. So they have their own data as well.
So how about the rest of the question, the multi-part question from Bill?
That one proved a lot more difficult. Some of that we did find from Transparency Connecticut, which is a website that uses data from the Office of the State Comptroller. And that site had some of the data just going back to 2010 in terms of salaries, full-time salaries and wages, and then how much was spent on transportation, along with how much was given out in terms of retirement pension payouts. So I had been corresponding a bit with the Department of, with the Office of the Comptroller to try and get data before 2010. I was not able to get that. For pensions, the other issue too was that what is listed on that particular site is the pension payouts, whereas if you go to another Office of the Comptroller site, that'll specifically show how much the state pays into retirement contributions each year, broken down by the type of retirement fund, because you have the teachers' retirement fund, the state employees' one, the judges' and commissioners' one, and then there's also one for the Department of Transportation, because that is in a separate fund from the general fund. So those are the main ones. And that's a better metric to use than payouts, because the payouts would include money that were the contributions from the employees themselves. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're looking at the state's contribution, that's just what the state has put towards retirement contributions. And when, after we had gathered all of this data, and some of that we had gotten from the State Department of Education as well, that's where we got data for education cost sharing grants that the state gave to towns, because that the whole question about how much the state spent on funds given to towns was
another difficult one,
because that comes in the form of like more than 10 different funds, right, where the money might be going from pilot, that's payment in lieu of taxes, right, for colleges and hospitals, or the education cost sharing. There's the Mashantucket, Pequot, and Mohegan Fund. So there's lots of different sources that you'd have to all add together. And some of that information was kind of disparate. Like, you could find it online for some years, but not other years. And some years it listed some funds, but not others. So we thought we'd just focus on the education cost sharing, because that is the majority of the
chunk,
money.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now we've got all the data, and we need to make sense of it. Who did you talk to help you make sense of all the numbers?
I reached out to four people, or ended up interviewing four people, a combination of economists and people who've really worked with the state budget. So we talked to Bill Sebas, who headed the State Office of Policy and Management from 91 to 94. So that was when the income tax was first implemented. We spoke with Spencer Kane, who was the former chief budget analyst for the state's nonpartisan Office of Fiscal Analysis. We talked to Fred Karstensen, who is the director of the Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis. That's at UConn, so I had found him through reaching out to a UConn spokesperson. And then I talked to Don Peppard, professor emeritus of economics at Connecticut College. So they all helped provide some context. And one of the takeaways I had from talking to the four of them was just how difficult it was to separate out the effect of policy at the state level versus the effect of economic growth when you're just looking at these numbers alone. Because mm-hmm. when you're just looking at a graph without any context, it doesn't really tell you anything.
Right.
So with something like the cigarette tax, the revenue has been increasing over the years, but that's coupled with many, many changes in the rate for the cigarette tax. And then you have to kind of compare that to say, okay, well, how many fewer people are
smoking
right. now yeah, when, exactly. when you have the health concerns? And then you take the gasoline excise right. tax, and that actually was lowered back in the 90s and just never raised again. So that's been falling, partially as gases get better mileage and have to get gas less frequently.
Right. Crude oil prices fluctuate.
Yeah, they fluctuate. More people are using electric cars. But then the one thing we didn't look at was the second petroleum tax, which is one that's a lot more volatile. So that's a whole other issue there as well. That's aside from the excise tax.
So what is your biggest takeaway from your reporting and the analysis of the data that we did?
My biggest takeaway is just how much retirement contributions have increased since we got that data going back to 2001. Mm-hmm. And even when you've adjusted for inflation based on the consumer price index, it still is just going up and up and up. And a lot of that is really accounting for past mistakes, for past failures in terms of literal decades of people not, of the government not paying enough and basically leaving future generations on the hook for this money. And so it was really, as the Connecticut Mirror has reported very well, and Keith Faniff has talked about this a lot, it really was Governor Malloy that started, you know, paying the proper amount into retirement funds.
So how about on the other end, after all of this reporting, what do you think is still remains unclear? Maybe from your perspective, or maybe from some of the feedback that you've gotten from readers or comments that you've seen?
Well, really, there's so much more we can do with this. Yeah. I mean, it's such a big question that we kind of tried to give an overview. And I did get a few emails saying, you know, thank you for you know, excellent reporting on this very complicated topic. But there's still a lot else out there. One thing that some people pointed out, and I tried to point out a little bit as well, but didn't get too much into, is that the tax revenue is really just one part of where the state is getting its money that it's spending, because right. you would also account for federal aid, for example. And there was some reporting earlier this year that Connecticut only gets, I think it's 74 cents back for every dollar its residents pay in federal taxes, which is the worst in the country. So essentially, Connecticut is subsidizing a lot of other states right. with its federal tax dollars. So that's an issue. And that has come up again with some of the pushes, particularly from Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz for the 2020 census, of saying this is crucial for everyone to complete the census, because this is how the federal government knows how many people are in Connecticut, and this is how they determine how much money Connecticut gets.
Right.
So that was one element, was federal dollars. And then you're dealing with things that are outside of taxes, like fees. There's slot revenue from the casinos. And then also, I had mentioned, there's, when you're looking at pensions, there's not just what the state puts in, but what the employees put in.
Right.
So that's a part of it. Bonding. So there's really a lot of factors aside from the tax revenue. And I think in the future, to do something more piecemeal, or maybe a little bit more manageable now and then, might be interesting. If we are to, I'd love to in the future take, you know, one specific fee or one specific tax or one specific fund
and dive into that
and do a chart showing the growth over the years and see kind of what that tells
yeah.
us.
Yeah. No, that's a great idea. So we also got an opportunity to talk to the question asker, Bill Hakkinen, about why this topic interested him.
This is.
Hi, Bill. This is Erica Moser at the Day newspaper. How are you?
Good, Erica. How are you?
So I guess I was just curious what made you decide to ask us this question?
Well, I guess because for the first many years that we lived, probably the first 30 or 40 years we lived here, everything was kind of steady. It's a beautiful state to live in. The economy was kind of humming along. And then about maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago, taxes seemed to be on everyone's mind. Every time we talked to neighbors and friends who live in Connecticut, invariably we get around to the topic of taxes. And generally the question is, where does all the money go? You know? So that's really why I asked the question. And I have to say, looking over the data that you put together, excuse me, and thinking about other sources of income and spending, this is a very complicated question. I'll be impressed if you could pull this off.
He had the perception, as well as a lot of people do, that the state just thinks they have this open checkbook to do whatever they want with it.
Well, my sense is that spending in the state of Connecticut is out of control. And I think we really need to start to restrain ourselves from spending. I think, I don't know how to put this tactfully, but politicians in general, not only at the state level, but the federal level, think that they have an open checkbook to spend money however they see fit. And I think we need to see some restraint in that. Just looking at your data, for example, in terms of, well, the spreadsheet that's labeled revenue and the total revenue sources column, you can see that that revenue went up marginally for the first few years that you've got reported since 1990, but in the last few years, it's exploded. And in 2018 alone, it's up over 10%. So from, you know, $17 to $19 billion. And if you look at your data to the left of that, almost all of that came from the income tax. $2 billion increase in income tax. So one has to wonder, where is all this money going between income tax and funding from casinos and the federal government and all the other taxes that you've listed? Where does it go is the question.
I presented him with some of our findings kind of midway through reporting
right.
when I had gathered some data, but we hadn't yet adjusted for inflation and was still working on gathering other data. So some of those questions we did answer a little bit, but because we only focused on a few elements of the state's spending, aside from pensions, we didn't really determine the other biggest factors of where state spending has increased the most. And one thing that is interesting there is with the salaries and wages, because as the Connecticut Mirror has reported, former Governor Dan Malloy, during his 8 years in office, ended up cutting about 2,500 executive branch jobs, which is 10%. And so a lot of people talk about, you know, government cutting waste and saying, well, why doesn't the government ever cut things? Well, in that example, the state government did cut jobs there. And so when you adjust when you end up adjusting the salaries and wages for inflation, it's actually lower now than it was in 2010.
Right. But still that big gap to fill of unfunded pensions.
Yes, is a big one.
It's a big one. Well, thank you for all your hard work, and thank you for joining me.
Sorry, I created work for you.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I mean, it's good because, again, with the last story, I looked at this, I was like, oh my God, this is so much work. And then when it was done, I was like, wow, this is really interesting and this is helpful. And I think just having, you know, that's part of the thing I like about Curious CT too, is that readers kind of will often ask questions in a way that's different than how reporters might usually approach topics, because we're mm-hmm. often so focused on kind of quote unquote the news hook or timeliness, or whereas when you really take a step back and look at these bigger questions, that's what can be really interesting and really important.
Exactly. Good.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time here.
Well, thank you, Bill.
I look forward to Sunday paper.
Yep. All right. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye now.
Get more details on Curious CT at theday.com/CuriousCT. You can also let us know what you're curious about by using the submission form you'll find at that link. Thanks for tuning in.